Hi friends, this is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus, and if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. It's finally arrived. How many of you would say Christmas is your favorite holiday of the year? That's a lot of you. Me too. I love Christmas. I love the parties. I love the excitement. I love having the kids out of school for a few weeks. I love the gift giving. I love the atmosphere of generosity. I love Christmas because it brings renewal to me. You know, we think of Christmas as showing up at the end of the calendar that we all use every day. But in reality, in Christian tradition, Christmas and Advent show up at the beginning of the year. It's like an annual reminder that the arrival of Jesus is where our hope begins. I love Christmas. And on top of all of the things I've already mentioned, I love the food. I love the family get-togethers. I love that so many families and friends are going to have the chance and take the opportunity to get together and share old memories and make new memories. And I know a lot of you feel the same way, but even if you look forward to the Christmas holidays, that also doesn't mean that you're ready, right? Any of you that are willing to admit you're not quite ready for Christmas yet? I know a lot of families in our community this year experienced something unique. They were still in school just 2 days ago. And many of us have, it felt like the winter break has only just begun. Maybe you're a last minute shopper. I think Target is open late tonight, gentlemen. Maybe you still have some cooking to do, or you haven't packed for the trip that you're taking, but whether you're a natural procrastinator or not, it seems like Christmas has a tendency sometimes to just sneak up on us. And that's ironic because it's easy to find ourselves unprepared spiritually for Christmas too, and it takes some time to get into that mode. As you know, the story of Christmas revolves around the birth of a baby, and the arrival of a baby is always a disruptive event. Can I get an amen for that? There's a certain look that new parents have that they have never been as tired. It doesn't matter. Go back to their high school and college and young adult days and all the all-nighters that they pulled. They weren't this tired. They have a new sleep-deprived glaze that comes over them. They are excited. They're anxious. They're exhausted all at the same time. And many of you remember the feeling. I remember the stress of bringing my children home from the hospital and just feeling like we were just in a race. It was everybody around us was racing as on the highway, and things were there was a lot of anxiety. My mom and dad tell a story about how I reacted when they brought the first of my younger brothers home from the hospital when I was nearly 4 years old. My grandparents had come to stay with me for a few days, and when they finally released the baby from the hospital, my grandparents had been building it up, all the excitement, and they finally got home to the house, and all of a sudden I was nowhere to be found. And I know my parents had to have been thinking, we have only been parents of two for a few minutes. How did we lose one already? We just started this, and they searched for a while. And finally, my dad got the idea to look under my bed where he found me hiding. And he said, hey, bud, what are you doing under there? And what's wrong? And I looked up at him and I said, I don't know what to say. I don't remember that four-year-old moment, but I can only imagine that it was beginning to sink in with me that I was no longer going to be the center of attention moving forward. There was a new kid in town. I was not the only child in the house anymore, and I was going to have to share the spotlight. And like a lot of other older siblings, I wasn't quite sure I was ready for that change. I'm not sure I was ready to give up being the main attraction. That was not a transition that I had asked for or I was looking for. But just like getting a new baby brother, some of the most significant changes in life come whether you're ready or not, right? And when we read about the story of the first Christmas, we find that there were some people who were ready. People who were anxious, who had been praying, who had been studying and searching for signs of the Messiah's arrival. Some people were really eager for that moment. But we also find in this story people who were not expecting anything. People who weren't ready. They were caught off guard, and for them, the events of the first Christmas story were cause for alarm. Now, chances are that you've heard at least a portion of the Christmas story before in its entirety. If you've lived in the Western Hemisphere for very long, you probably have at least a passing knowledge of the story of Jesus' birth. You've seen the nativity scene. And it would be a simple, intuitive approach to just look at this story and look at those images and think of that as just a historical piece. You may believe it actually happened. You may be on the fence about that question. But this morning, I want to invite you to something different. I want to invite you for a few moments to put yourself into the shoes of a few of the characters in this story. I want you to imagine how they felt. I want you to consider how they responded. And I hope you're going to discover that the Christmas story is still happening. And that your response to the story of Christmas can set the direction and the course for your entire life. If you got a Bible with you this morning, we're going to take a look at a few verses in the book of Matthew, chapter 2. Matthew is the first book in the New Testament portion of your Bible. If you use the table of contents, look for New Testament in big letters and then just keep going. It'll be the very next thing. Matthew was Jewish and he was an up-close and personal friend to Jesus. He became friends with Jesus and then spent the latter years of his life following, traveling with Jesus, learning from Jesus, and then later in his own life, Matthew took it upon himself to write an account of what Jesus said and what Jesus did. He wanted people to read the lessons. He wanted people to hear the stories. He wanted us to be able to imagine ourselves in those moments with the miracles that were performed. But he also recorded some of the best details that we have about the birth of Jesus as well. He's the only biblical writer, in fact, to tell this portion of the story that we're going to look at today from Matthew, the second chapter. And here's what Matthew said. Chapter 2, verse 1, he says, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. Now, this verse sets the historical scene for us. It lets us know that Jesus was born in a time when powerful Roman Empire leaders appointed regional kings and governors to keep the peace in provinces all over its conquered territory. But Herod, the king of Judea, he was unique because he had outlasted most of the governors. By the time Jesus was born, Herod had been ruling as king of Judea for over 30 years. He had constructed seaports. He had constructed fortresses and palaces. He led successful military campaigns. He survived assassination attempts, and the Romans appreciated the iron fist with which he ruled, and they gave him the title King of the Jews. He was experienced. He was strategic. And his number one priority was to protect himself against any threats to his rule, which is why over the years and by the time Jesus was born, Herod had already executed his brother-in-law, three of his own sons, and one of his own wives. He was serious about keeping himself alive and keeping himself on the throne, keeping himself in power at all costs. And so he was always looking over his shoulder for new threats. And Matthew tells us in the second part of that verse, says about that same time, about the time that Jesus was born, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star and it rose and we have come to worship him." Now these men show up unannounced. And our best guess is that they are astronomers and astrologers from Persia, people who studied ancient texts and charted the stars, trying to discern a message from the divine. They probably were not Jews themselves, but Jews had lived in their country, in their empire for centuries. And so they had had exposure to the Jewish prophecies and history. And somehow they interpreted the appearance of a new star as a sign of the Jewish Messiah's arrival. Now, I've seen Christmas pageants and I've seen movies about this story that assume that these men just marched right into town and went straight to the king's palace and went and got an audience with Herod himself right off the bat. But I don't think that happened. I don't think they got an audience with Herod. I think they were just asking around town, "Where is this king?" As if everybody was going to be excited about it, as if everybody was going to know about it. They were foreigners in a Jewish society, and they would have been treated with suspicion. And you've got to wonder, why did Matthew include them in the story? Why do they get a mention? Why do they play an important part in this tale for us? Well, Matthew tells us the reason they traveled such a great distance was because they were coming to worship Jesus. The wise men showed up because they were looking for something to worship. They were on a pilgrimage to find someone to worship. And I think that they and we have that in common. See, I think every single one of us is on a pilgrimage trying to find something to worship. I realize that may sound strange to us here in the 21st century, but I still think it's true that we're on a quest, trying to worship something. One pastor I like to listen to said it this way. He said, "Worship is our response to what we value the most." Think about what that's saying about us. Worship is our response to what it is that we value the most. What kind of things do we value the most in our culture? Is it entertainment? Is it athletic dominance? Is it patriotism? Is it beauty? Maybe it's just our kids. Maybe we just value our kids the most. Think about those experiences that cause you to quickly whip out your cell phone so that you can hit record and share something on social media. Think about those brands, those teams, those accomplishments that are so important to you that you'll give them free advertising on your shirt or on the back of your car. Worship. It's our response to what we value the most. Think about it. What do you look at first when you see a group photo that you're in? You look at your own face, right? You look at yourself or you look at your kids. One of the two. Because worship is our response to what we value the most. And the thing is, that's the way we're wired. You may not be into worshiping a divine being. You may be here this morning and still trying to figure all of that out. But we're all built to worship something. David Foster Wallace was a young, accomplished author and professor before he died just a few years ago. He was not religious. But in a passage from one of his most well-known essays, he wrote this. He said, "There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And an outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God to worship is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you'll never have enough. Never feel you have enough. Worship your own body and beauty and you'll always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you'll die a million deaths before they finally plant you in the ground. Worship power and you'll feel weak and afraid. And you'll need ever more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, you'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out, and so on." And then he says, "Look, the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, it's that they're unconscious. They're default settings for us. Now, he wasn't a Christian. He wasn't a churchgoer. But he recognized in human nature this ingrained pursuit that's inside every human being to worship something. And the real challenge for us is deciding, what's it going to be? I'm going to worship something. What am I going to worship? And if I don't choose it intentionally, I'll choose it unintentionally. But we all worship something. And that brings us back to the story of the wise men. You see, they had intentionally chosen to come worship the baby who had been born the king of the Jews. But Matthew tells us, beginning in verse 3, that King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard about this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. You have to imagine, everyone in Jerusalem has got it in mind that if Herod goes on the offensive and thinks that there's a challenge to his power, things are about to get rough for us. Everybody in town was concerned about this. And Herod called a meeting of all the leading priests and the teachers of religious law. And he said, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? In Bethlehem in Judea, they said, for that's what the prophet wrote. So then Herod, that's when he called in the wise men, called them in for a private meeting, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. And he told them, you go on to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child, and when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too. Now remember what we know about this guy. Remember what we know about Herod. He's a king who lived in constant fear of losing his power. He built fortresses to shield himself from attacks. He built prisons to hold the prisoners that he didn't execute on the spot. And by the time Jesus was born, Herod was in his late 60s. He had spent his whole adult life worshiping himself and his own power. And so the announcement that there was a new king of the Jews that had shown up, that was a problem for Herod. And he told the wise man that he wanted to go and worship Jesus, but the truth that we find out later in the story is that he never intended to worship Jesus. He intended to kill Jesus. You see, when Christmas showed up, Herod wasn't ready. Herod wasn't ready to admit that he wasn't in control. Herod was not ready to submit to God's will for the world. Herod wasn't ready to give up worshiping his own power and his own authority, his own prestige. And worship is our response to what we value the most. That was what was most important to Herod. You know, the thing about the Christmas season is it invites us to reconsider what we worship. It reminds us that Jesus showed up on the scene and asked us to follow him. And then he went to a cross. He taught us to put God first, ahead of our ambition, ahead of our comfort, ahead of our entertainment. He taught us to lay down our lives and to lay down our own plans for the sake of putting God's kingdom first. Jesus came and he taught us to put God ahead of our jobs, ahead of our hobbies, ahead of our pleasure, ahead of our kids and our family. And the way we feel when we hear that is probably a good indicator of what we value the most, which means it's a good indicator of what we worship. Here's how the wise men responded. Verse 9. After their interview with Herod, the wise men went their way, and the star that they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house. They saw the child with his mother Mary. And they bowed down and they worshiped him. And then they opened their treasure chests and they gave him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. They responded to Christmas with worship. When Jesus showed up, they dropped everything. They left their homeland. They left whatever family they had. They dropped everything to go and offer worship to this baby. They responded on bended knee. Herod did just the opposite. He responded trying to get rid of Jesus. He wanted so badly to hold on to what he had that he ignored the star. He ignored the heavens. He ignored the prophecies. He ignored the wise men. He did everything he could to kill the baby Jesus. But history tells us that very soon after this, Herod got very sick. And there was another astronomical event, a lunar eclipse. And right after that lunar eclipse, Herod passed away. He was still the king, but there was a new king right there to take his place. You know, you think about his response compared to that of the wise men who responded on bended knee and brought gifts. And I wonder what you would have done. If you'd been in Herod's shoes, thinking about all that you stood to lose, how do you think you would have responded? If you'd been one of the wise men in Persia who saw the star for the first time, I wonder how you would have reacted if you would have started packing and brought gold with you. Of course, we can only speculate on what we would have done in those circumstances over 2,000 years ago. There's no way we'll ever know the answer to what we really would have done in that situation. But there is a more important question this morning that needs no speculation. It needs an answer from you. See, Christmas is here again. God sent a king into the world, and you have to decide whether you'll worship this newborn king or continue to worship what you've always valued the most. Most of us, we like to be in control, don't we? Whether we admit it or not, we like to be the king or the queen of our own lives. We like to control our own destiny and control our own resources and sometimes even try to control the people around us. It may not be much, but we like the power we have. And when a new king shows up on the scene, the person who has the most difficult time adjusting is the old king or the old queen. But it doesn't have to be that way for you. That famous Christmas song we sang together earlier this morning, "O Holy Night," it comes to a crescendo when we sing the words, "Fall on your knees." And your journey has brought you this far. And here you are, with the Christ having come into the world and inviting you to a response. Your journey's brought you to this point, and now you have a decision to make. And I wonder, how are you going to respond to the arrival and the invitation of Jesus? This morning, one of my friends, Allison Baker, has decided that today's the day she responds to the invitation of Jesus and says, "I'm in." And so we're going to get a chance to witness a baptism. It's going to be up here on the screens, technology permitting, here in just a second. But I want you to know that this opportunity is available to you. There are tables set up in the back corners of the room, and some of our spiritual leaders from our church are here this morning and ready to walk with you as you take a next step, maybe as you bend your knee for the first time or for the next time, to say, "Jesus, I really do want you to lead my life." Let's watch together as Allison makes that commitment in front of all of us.
We're still waiting a minute, so we're going to sing a little.